Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. My name's Steve Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist.
How are you, Stephen? Good to be with you.
And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good to be back.
What has Baylor's been on a bye week, and have they healed up? Have they improved? Have they gotten over the West Virginia loss? Kevin, your immediate thoughts.
Well, I think they have to get over the immediate loss to West Virginia because they don't have any other choice. I do think what's interesting here, though, is that how Art Briles had mentioned the Big 12 coaches call, how they've kind of changed their focus a little bit, really kind of focusing in on getting ready for Kansas and not worrying about all the big things that are else out there in terms of like the Big 12 championship, trying to get into the national playoff picture, things like that. And I think sometimes games like this, as disappointing as the effort was and the outcome was at West Virginia, but I think that maybe this was a time for them to kind of take stock of who they are, what they're all about, and what they need to do in terms of these last five games. They're going to get another bye in a couple of weeks, but I think this was probably a good way to kind of reexamine everything within themselves and kind of get themselves set up. Plus the fact they needed the time to kind of get the right side of their offensive line, at least in some sync, since you've got an entirely new right side of your offensive line with Jarrell Broxton and Pat Colbert. Jake?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. Not funny. Obviously, it was going to come up because that's a huge loss, missing your starting right tackle and right guard. But I was kind of surprised to say, or hear Art Briles say on Monday at his press conference, that they almost wish they didn't have a bye week. He said, you know, the reason they're in business is to play games. And he kind of acted like he'd rather played this last Saturday didn't have the week off. You know, I would have thought they would love to have a week off after, you know, losing by two touchdowns and then losing a couple of starters and other guys getting dinged up. So, that first of all, that surprised me because they need that time, I think, to get some new guys in the lineup. And to hear them say they're soul-searching and they're refocusing on, you know, winning each week, I was also surprised to hear that. I think this team maybe got caught up in perhaps its ranking. Perhaps it's, you know, the numbers it put up offensively, the win against TCU, all that. And I think they were looking bigger picture each week and not as much focus on the actual games and the opponents. I think we saw that against West Virginia. I think if Baylor knows right now how good West Virginia is, maybe they take them more seriously. But at that point, I don't think Baylor took them as seriously as they should have. So I think it's a great time for a bye week, but you know, judging by Briles' comments, it seems like they weren't as excited about having a week off.
I guess the thing for me is that if they had a loss, this seems like, to me, it seems like a pretty good setup for them because they get a week to get healed up and they get a week to do a slow boil. And I think the fact that Briles wasn't real thrilled about having the off week, I think maybe he needed, you know, it was maybe something mentally for him. But also they come back against a Kansas team that they should be able to handle. So if you got to have a loss, this seems like it's kind of a good setup to get your head screwed back on because you're not looking at a top five team coming in this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, had Baylor won coming off a bye, who knows how seriously they take Kansas. I mean, they're going to beat them no matter what, but it might not have been, say, their best effort of the year. Now I think they're going to go into Saturday homecoming game with a mission of just, frankly, annihilating Kansas and trying to make a statement. You had TCU scoring 82 points last week, and you know that caught the nation's attention. And I know Texas Tech isn't good. I know Kansas is worse. But, you know, this is a chance, even with a bad opponent, to remind the voters and maybe especially the playoff committee that Baylor is a very good team. I mean, I like that term, slow boil. Ease into it and you know, go out against Kansas and just try to make a statement as much as you can against a team like Kansas.
Kevin, do you think that maybe because of the fact they had that great comeback against TCU, did we maybe kind of get, rose-colored glasses, but, you know, and not see that they had some real problems on offense against Texas and for, you know, for a while against TCU? and also defensive problems against TCU.
I think, you know, it's always easy when you come off a loss that you can really it shows glaringly what your weaknesses are. And obviously Baylor still has some issues to confront with its secondary, and obviously there's some things offensively that just aren't going very well at the present time, especially with Bryce Petty. This is probably the best time for them to really kind of keep this in the moment. Maybe that was their biggest problem throughout the whole year, guys, is the fact that, you know, Art Briles kept talking, especially starting at the Big 12 meetings in Dallas in late July, about, you know, if you go 12-0, you run the Big 12 at 9-0, you're going to have a chance at the Final Four. And I think that, and that's fine that he was talking about that, but maybe what this program wasn't doing enough, if you had a look at it, is maybe they weren't keeping it in the moment enough and trying to focus on it's not all about TCU, it's all about Texas, it's all about West Virginia, things like that. You know, they still kept looking ahead, and I think that's maybe one of the things that they might have been guilty of not paying a close attention to, things of that nature.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. They did the soul searching and refocusing on each week. Because you have to assume that they weren't doing that based on those comments. And frankly, that's a little troubling. You know, obviously you're coming off a Big 12 title and you're one of the favorites, and you should be thinking that you want to win a Big 12 title, but you can't let yourself get ahead like that. And I think Baylor is guilty of that. And I think, aside from West Virginia blitzing the crap out of Baylor, you know, its offense hitting some big plays, I think that's the looking ahead to blame for the loss in West Virginia. And, you know, you got to use that loss to your benefit. Maybe this team comes out even hungrier and more focused on each week, and it might help the team now. But they're behind the eight ball. As we see in the newly released playoff rankings, they're number 13. That's a long climb ahead. If you want to get back in the playoff conversation. So I'm saying Kansas isn't good, but you gotta still make a statement. And then the following week at Oklahoma, there's your big chance to jump back into the top 10. So anyway, enough about the bye week. Let's talk about – okay. Well, I was just saying all the running backs are healthy. For the first time all year, Devin Chafin wasn't really ready for the SMU game. And since then, some guys – everyone but Shock Linwood, I guess, has been dinged up a time or two. But Johnny Jefferson is back. Devin Chafin's full strength. And you got Shock Linwood. How much they really take it to Kansas with the running attack this week, I think that might be their strategy going into the game.
I think that Baylor is really going to want to try to push, and I think with this new right side of the offensive line, they're going to try to see what they can get out of them. And I'm saying this is a good opponent for them this week because Riles kind of likes to test fly stuff before he hits a really big opponent. Kevin, do you got any thoughts on this one?
Number one, even though I wasn't a opponent of Shock Linwood getting the bulk of the carries, you know, 20-plus carries, which he's done the last 3 weeks, but I will say that I think that obviously with everybody healthy, you'll see all three of them use Chafin, Linwood, and Johnny Jefferson to a certain extent. But I think also Baylor, you would like to think, has really done some things to adjust to get some of its mid-range passing game back, because that's the one thing about this passing game that's really been off here the last few weeks, especially because it was glaring in West Virginia, where there just wasn't anything that they were doing to concentrate on trying to get, you know, those 10 to 15 yard routes so they could get people open underneath. And you've got to do that. I mean, look, if you're taking shots down the field all the time, that is your lowest percentage completion probability on those types of plays, and you're just not going to complete a decent number of them to be consistent with your offense. It would be my hope that what they've done over this week, this period of time, is that they focus the Kansas game on those two elements, the mid-range game to get that working, because they're going to have to get it ready for Oklahoma, because Oklahoma's got a pretty good secondary. So it would be my hope that they can get those two elements of their offense straightened out.
Yeah, and that kind of leads us into where we wanted to go next, is with Bryce Petty, the last really 3 weeks, except for the quarter against TCU, he's been a little bit less than expected in terms of accuracy and things like that. Jake, do you think this is the Petty we're going to have, or do you think he'll get back to form?
I will say the Petty we'll see Saturday against Kansas will be the one that we saw in the first half of 2013, completing a higher percentage of passes and rolling up some numbers. I also think he'll do that against Texas Tech. After that, I wish I could say I knew what Petty would get, but I don't know. I'm leaning toward the one we've seen these last few weeks because, frankly, the numbers speak for themselves. Petty against winning teams, and especially winning teams with pretty good defenses, his numbers drop. And that's going to be natural for most quarterbacks. You can't play the torrid pace he did start 2013 against good teams. But, you know, having said that, he needs to be better than he's been these last few weeks, you know, with the exception of the fourth quarter against TCU. The numbers suggest that he's not going to be as good at Oklahoma. Against Oklahoma last year, I know Baylor won big, but he completed 50% of his passes. The running game and the defense won that game last year, not Bryce Petty.
Right.
So I'm leaning towards saying we're going to get kind of an average Bryce Petty against Oklahoma, maybe against Oklahoma State and against Kansas State, because that's what he's been against really good teams. And I think he'll be great against Kansas. I think this Saturday he'll have a big game, and you know, people will be wondering which, you know, is he back? I don't know. I don't think you can make a judgment on Bryce Petty based on this game against Kansas. Unless he's bad, then it's really time to panic.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Jake, because I think people will look at and probably expect a very fine performance against the Jayhawks for homecoming. But I think everyone's going to look at it and say, okay, that's fine. So what Bryce are we going to get in Norman on November 8th? And, you know, fair or unfair, this is what happens when you're in the most highly decorated position on a football team, where you're just going to, fair or unfair, that you get the most criticism, you get the most praise. And what Bryce has to do is, number one, is just figure out a way to just keep it real, if you will. And if he can do that, then he'll be fine from a mental standpoint. I think Bryce sometimes his biggest problem is himself, because you can just see sometimes that when he's back there that he wants to make the perfect play. And he can't do, and if he doesn't make the perfect play, and Steven, I remember you touched on this earlier in the year, but if he doesn't make the perfect play, then he considers it a complete, I don't want to say failure, but he looks at it and says, oh, it was a disaster, or it wasn't very good, things of that nature, and he can't look at it like that. If you make a bad play, you've got to put it behind you and move on. And I think Bryce has to invest a little bit more in a short-term memory and just put a bad play behind him and then move on to the next, because that's all he can do.
Yeah, I agree with you. The perfect play can go for 4 yards, let's be honest, if that's all the defense is giving you. And rather than going for trying to go for a deep ball. And that's what this offense has been missing when it's been struggling to string together a longer drive, is 4 and 5 yard gains in the passing game. It seems like they're all big or nothing. I mean, that's probably a slight exaggeration, but we saw against West Virginia, there wasn't much in the intermediate game, and that's something you mentioned, Kevin, that they have to work on.
Yeah.
And I agree. He's got to understand that on 1st and 10, a 4 yard gain is not a bad play. In fact, against some defenses, it's a great play. It's not about the big number sometimes. It's just about moving the ball. And I think maybe that needs to be part of the new focus going forward after the loss at West Virginia.
The things with Petty is that what I thought one of his strengths was last year, even though his play dropped off, he still kept the really good interception stats. Now, he's had a couple of more interceptions this year. And I think teams have changed the way that they play against Baylor's offense, and they've kind of figured it out, and Baylor's going to have to come up with some things to force them out of what they're doing right now on defense. Just about any team that they play, to me, was always one of Petty's strengths. And while it's true the running game and the defense won against Oklahoma, he did not make any plays that cost Baylor big time. If you don't end up giving the other team a short field a lot of times, you end up pretty good in that situation. But Petty's a fifth-year senior. I think you're not going to see any huge changes in him now. You're not going to see that same kind of growth that you see from redshirt freshman to sophomore. I think who he is pretty much who you're going to have for the rest of the season.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was on. I'm on ESPN 1660 in Waco every week, and you know, they asked me about the personnel, the defense, what can change. And I said, well, one thing that's not going to change is the personnel. They are who they are, and you're right. Petty is, a sixth-year senior now. He is who he is, and it's not going to really change. The staff and he just need to maximize his strengths and then just give him better opportunities for completions that aren't 40 or 50 yards downfield.
has, and Kevin, you touched on it earlier in the podcast, has there been a shift in Baylor's thinking? Are they going more short-term now, and it's like we're going to do this week, and what falls out?
Well, I think it's both Jake and I have picked it up, especially the first thing that I saw was when Art was talking about this, as far as in the Big 12 coaches call with his segment on Monday, when he was talking about, he goes about the goals, and he goes, really, we've gone in the other direction. For us, it's a small picture. We're trying to win a football game. That's all we've been doing the last 10 days. We just needed to reflect on ourselves and work on ourselves. All we're doing is fighting to beat Kansas, and that's it. And I think that's a really interesting approach that they really want to take. And the fact that he made it public was, I think, the thing that kind of struck me as to his, you know, view on that. But I kind of think that sometimes, but you don't want to say a loss, there's such a thing as a good loss, because there's no such thing as a good loss. But what a loss does is that it points out that you've got, that you're a flawed team, and there are a lot of things that you've got to work on. Even if you were coming off a win going into the bye, and you could say, well, we need to still work on correcting some things, it just changes your mentality of, you're not as great as you think you are, but you're not as bad as you think you are, but here's where you need to get better, because this is what happened and why you lost. Talk about the penalties in the West Virginia game until we're blue in the face, but the bottom line is that there were a lot of things that didn't go well from a team standpoint that really hurt them against West Virginia, and hopefully they figured that out. I think I'll leave it with this. I think the important thing to watch here is how teams will defend Baylor moving forward, because obviously West Virginia played a style which is very unique in a 3-3-5 look, where they brought a lot of pressure on Bryce Petty, caused him, forced some throws that maybe Bryce didn't want to make, and really caused the offense to look dysfunctional, if you will. So, and not every team is capable of playing a 3-3-5 or will switch their game plan to play that. But it's just going to be a question of how much pressure, and I do expect more teams to throw more pressure at Baylor, especially the fact that, number one, when teams hit Bryce, even when there was a full-strength offensive line, you know, he made some erratic throws. Now if that right side still tried to get itself figured out, that's going to be interesting to see. I bet you even Kansas, as weak as they are, they're going to try it just to see what happens with him.
Yeah, I'm gonna. My last word for this segment is, yeah. I mean, the thinking has changed. It is more short term. I think because of that, you are gonna see a more focused team. I think you are gonna see a team playing better each week, not worrying about the playoffs, because right now that they shouldn't be concerned with that. They need to be concerned with winning games. So I think we're gonna see a team playing with better effort and focus. What I think we will see, though, most of all, though, does this team have the talent and depth to win out anyway? Are they good enough to go win in Norman? Are they good enough to beat a Kansas State team that, granted, it'll be in Waco? You know, I don't know. We're going to find out. You know, I'd love to see them prove me wrong, but I think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see a focused team, but one that could be overmatched, not as a whole team, but maybe in a few areas that could cost you a game. Perhaps, you know, the secondary, or like we said, picking up blitzes with the offensive line.
And we are getting ready to take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about recruiting, and we will take a look at the Kansas Jayhawks.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from Sikkim Sports. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Jake, you have some information about a commitment from J.W. Ketchum. What can you tell us?
I do, and I feel like this segment we should call it the safety dance, because we got J.W. Ketchum's commitment. He's a potential safety. Kevin's going to talk about a decommitment from a safety. And then we got Khalil Houghton as a tease, the Waco Midway safety, who is visiting this weekend. So sorry for that terrible wordplay. But
yeah, it was terrible, but I did like the song, admittedly, but that's okay.
Oh, I love that song. That's what I'm here for. I'm the English major. I have the terrible puns. Okay. J.W. Ketchum, he's at Houston Lamar this year. It's his first year there. He actually transferred from Marshall High in the Fort Bend School District. He plays quarterback for Lamar. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do know that, but he's an athlete in every sense of the word. It was one of the most odd commitments in recent memory, just from the standpoint of we thought Baylor had moved on from him, and I thought he had moved on from Baylor as well. This was one of the quieter recruitments we've known of. Just 2 weeks ago, he talked to Jason Howell, who's the lead recruiting analyst for this region for Rivals.com, and you know, Ketchum did not tip his hand that Baylor was a huge factor in his recruitment. And then out of the blue on Sunday night, he tweets that he's committed to Baylor. So this is an outstanding addition to this class. He's a four-star athlete. He told me that Baylor recruited him as an athlete. He said inside receiver, outside receiver, or safety are all possibilities. He doesn't really care at this point. You know, that'll play itself out once he gets to campus. And he mentioned to me that the biggest factor in his recruitment was Kendall Briles. And if that rings any bells, it's because I think it was in April or May of this year, or maybe earlier or later, I can't remember, sometime around late spring or early summer, another school turned in Baylor for allegedly Kendall Briles recruiting him or going to the campus when there was a no contact period. Briles was exonerated, cleared of any possible infractions. And that's about the time where the dialogue, or at least what we know of, quieted down. But obviously, Kendall had a great relationship with Ketchum throughout that. And my gut feeling tells me, even though I called this the safety dance, is that he ends up a receiver. He says he could play both, but he kind of hinted at receiver being his preference. I would love to see him at safety. I'd also love to see Blake Lynch, the Gilmer commitment, also at safety, but you know that'll play itself out. And now to the bad news, we throw it to Kevin.
And within about 8 hours, 8-9 hours of J.W. Ketchum tweeting that he was committing to Baylor, Keller Fossilridge, safety, Montrell Wilson, who had committed to Baylor back in July, announced he was decommitting from Baylor. I guess I could say I was surprised, but I really wasn't, because back in August, when Baylor was going through its fall workouts, they had worked like the Dickens to get him down to come watch one of their scrimmages right before the season started, because it was right about then when TCU had offered Wilson, and I think they were very much concerned that he was going to flip to TCU right after the Horned Frogs offered. And what's ironic about this is the fact that Brian Norwood, the assistant head coach, and coaches, the safeties, had gone up to watch Fossilridge play the previous Thursday when they won a very important game against Keller Central and that sort of thing. But as it turns out, Wilson had been going to a couple of TCU games. He was at Oklahoma State 2 weeks ago, and then he went to the Oklahoma State game at Amon Carter 2 weeks ago. And behind those things, the fact that he's been on TCU's campus quite a bit, which is closer, obviously, than Waco, and it just kind of plays itself out. So it's just one of those things where I'm not surprised. I love him as an athlete. He's a great-looking athlete. He's got great length. I know that he's tested about 4.6 in a couple of camps. I'm still a little bit concerned about closing speed about that. I'm not saying that as a disparaging remark, because the fact that he's a great-looking athlete, he'll probably play in the right space. I would expect him to eventually commit to TCU here in the near future. It's just a matter of when, I would think. Yeah. And, of course, what makes this interesting is now – You get the Baylor TCU recruiting wars in full length, because keep in mind a couple of years ago, it took Shocklinwood away from a TCU.
I don't know. It's definitely a loss. This guy kind of came out of nowhere. You'd like to have both, but at least you already have that replacement in for him. And then hopefully, segue alert, you get Khalil Houghton in as well. That's the safety you want the most. So he's visiting this weekend. And Kevin, got any more information on his sudden change of mind to have an official visit and have it this weekend?
Well, I think with Khalil is that he's officially into Baylor this week, and then he's going to take his final official visit to Texas Tech on November 15th. He's already done official visits to Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Nebraska, so this is the last of his five coming up with these two. And then he'll just kind of decide after that where he wants to go. I think in Khalil's case, Baylor wants him so bad, he'd be such a great fit for them. And I think that would be a crushing loss, more so than Wilson, if they don't get him. I think that's really what it comes down to. And I think from this standpoint that this visit is, number one, it's very important that Baylor did get him to take an official visit, because even though he's been on the campus so many times as an unofficial visitor, there's a difference when you go through an official visit as opposed to going through unofficial visits. So I think it's a very important part for him to understand different elements of what this program is like, so to speak. Then we'll just kind of have to wait and see. We could get the decision around Thanksgiving. It kind of depends on how far Waco midway season is going, and then or maybe we get it in December. But it's a good thing that they got him in here. There was some last-minute talk about Notre Dame trying to get him to come up and visit them in December. That's obviously not going to happen now unless he wants to go up on his own. What I tried had come in on late to see if they could get him to take an unofficial or at least to come up there an official maybe in December or January. That's not going to happen now, at least from an official standpoint. If Khalil's going to go up there, he's going to go up there on his own.
And Baylor has a game coming up against the Kansas Jayhawks. New coach. They're definitely playing with more enthusiasm, even though it hadn't shown up in the one loss column. Jake, what are you seeing of the Jayhawks as a team right now?
Yeah, you're right. New and more enthusiasm. I think Charlie Weiss was a big fish out of water. I think he's an NFL type coach who was shouldn't have been at the college level. And Clint Bowen played at his high school football in Lawrence, went to Kansas, played football there. He's a guy that loves the program, and I think the players are kind of buying into that. You know, time will tell if he gets a chance at the head coaching job, but I think right now he's doing the best that he can. Kansas just doesn't have the talent of the rest of the Big 12, and especially not the depth. This, you know, the offense, which was Charlie Weiss's specialty, I mean, he kind of flip-flopped. He started with an aerial attack. He got, you know, some high-profile quarterback transfers to the program. Didn't work out, and then he started, you know, trying to run the ball a lot more for ball control and time of possession to try to stay in games. And, of course, that hasn't worked either. So, I mean, this is, to be frank, it's just a bad team. They're averaging under, you know, or about 3.5 yards per carry on offense. And they're giving up nearly 5 yards per carry defensively. Their secondary is pretty good, and they've been very solid against passing teams. They're only giving up 28 points per game, which is not bad considering just, you know, how ineffective their offense is and just how much pressure there is on the Kansas defense. And they've had, you know, some solid success against Texas Tech, West Virginia, and Oklahoma State, at least defensively. So I think from that standpoint, it's a really good challenge for this Baylor offense in the passing attack to try to get its kinks worked out. This isn't an all-around just horrifically bad Kansas team. Their defense does have a pulse, and I think it will be a pretty decent test.
Kevin, what are your thoughts on them?
You know, I like what Clint Bowen has done there. I mean, he inherited, obviously, a very difficult situation, and he's kind of put a stamp on the program, making Michael Cummings his starting quarterback because the Montel Cozart thing just isn't working or wasn't working. He was the defensive coordinator. I mean, he admits, I enjoy listening to him on the Big 12 coaches call every week because he's pretty upfront about where he's at and what he wants to do. I know he wants the job. He's a Kansas alum. He played for Glenn Mason back in the late 80s, early 90s. And so, I mean, Kansas is in his blood, and that's a great thing. Their talent level is extremely deficient. I thought he made a pretty good move to put Tony Pearson, who was one of their more effective running backs last year, who was moved to wide receiver this year, put him back at running back this year, moving forward. He got hurt against Oklahoma State a couple weeks ago, but he should be good to go for this game. And, I really like the fact that, you know, he feels like the kids are, you know, buying into what they're trying to do here, trying to make, if you will, chicken salad out of chicken soup. And it's really important for him to finish well. Even if they go 2-10, you know, I don't know if they would – I don't think that's going to give him the job. I think he has to have a pretty decent finish, and they don't. And it's not easy for them at the end of the year because they still have to play TCU and Oklahoma, which isn't going to be a lot of fun, and Kansas State as well. So I don't like their chances there. I would love to see him at least he'll get an interview for it. I don't think he'll get it, but at least he is embracing the opportunity and doing the best that he possibly can with it.
You know, it's a dangerous thing to, I think, it can be dangerous to hire a guy because he's one of your own. That's what I'm saying. It's too early to have a verdict on Cliff Kingsbury. But right now, you know, he's trending downward right now. And, you know, you want to give him some time to get his recruits in. But if it doesn't work out, that's going to be a pretty nasty split. Firing a guy who is basically a hero in the eyes of the fan base. So if Kansas wants to listen to me, I caution them about hiring a guy. Man, you just want to hire the best fit, and who cares where he went to college. You want to win games, and yeah. If you feel like he's the best to do it, then hire him. But don't hire him because he went to your school and loves the Jayhawks and wants to be a lifer there. I mean, that's not good enough for me.
Right. Well, and I agree with that, Dick. I was just pointing out the fact that he embraces the Kansas thing. And, yeah. Well, look, our Bryles went to Texas Tech, so that tells you that. And Mac Brown, when he was he coached at Oklahoma at one point. So it's just a matter of, you're right, just finding the right person who you think is going to be the best fit that can take your program to the next level. Exactly.
They're playing with more enthusiasm. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Kansas was a good team. You know, was there? That was a scary team to play.
Yeah.
But right now, they've gone just almost the exact opposite as Baylor. That, you know, Baylor has gone from being just, you know, a punchline to being a very dangerous team, and Kansas has gone from being a very dangerous team to being a punchline.
Yeah, I was there. I think it was 2008. That might have been Bryles' first year. Was it 2008 or 2009 that Kansas went to the Orange Bowl? I went to the Baylor game in Lawrence that year, and first of all, there was about a 3-hour rain delay, so it's already a bad day. And then Baylor just gets completely run off the field by Kansas. So, you know, bad day gets worse. Yeah, that's not that long ago, and I think anyone is foolish to say no program or any program can't win. Any program can win. I mean, look at Mississippi State and Ole Miss right now. They've been kind of down in the SEC West. They're the top two teams there, and obviously Baylor, TCU, all examples of that. I think Kansas, this next hire is they can't blow it. They've had two bad hires in a row, and a third will just sink this program even deeper.
Yeah. Now let me ask y'all something. How do y'all see the Baylor offense attacking the Kansas defense?
Well, I'll jump in first, Kevin. I think, you know, we mentioned the running backs being available. I think Baylor tries to get that going. But, you know, something the staff has said over and over is, you know, it's basically our Bryles' philosophy is we're gonna take what the defense gives us. I'd like to see them do that. I don't think they've been doing that this year consistently, I should say. He even said at Iowa State game they wanted to pass it as much as possible. That's not taking what the defense is giving you. That's trying to impose your will. And maybe that's kind of what's gotten this team into trouble. So I guess what I want to see is if they're going to blitz more guys than there are blockers, Baylor's got to have some quick routes, underneath routes or something available to beat that. If they play soft, then run it at them. I that's what I want to see, Stephen, is not run or pass. I want to see Baylor take what's given.
How do y'all see the Kansas offense matching up against the Baylor defense? Because I'll tell y'all right now, as high as I was on the defensive line at the start of the year, they've been neutralized pretty well by mobile quarterbacks.
Yeah, and Kansas does have some mobile guys. I know it's Cummings now that Montel Cozar is no longer the starter. I don't think Kansas is going to be effective at all.
I just don't see where Kansas is going to be able to move the ball consistently against Baylor. You know, with Michael Cummings, I mean, they've gotten a couple 200-yard passing games from him the last couple of weeks. Their offense has looked a little bit better against Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. And the running game has been, you know, okay. But, look, this is not an offense that can – if Baylor gets into a shootout with you, which you would expect this to happen because it's at homecoming and it's everything else – that Baylor has going for it in its game. This is why Kansas was scheduled for the homecoming game. Let's put it for what it is. I mean, you get the homecoming game against the opponent that you feel like you're going to beat pretty convincingly, and this is what's going to happen. I mean, the only way, like I've said before, prior to the West Virginia game, or maybe not so much the TCU game, but in a lot of cases, Baylor is going to have to help somebody in order for them to keep them in the game or to have somebody have a chance to beat them. And they're just going to have to Baylor would have to absolutely self-destruct in this game in order for Kansas to win or even keep it close.
Yeah, no doubt.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we will look at the world of college football and the Big 12.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football With Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from Sikkim Sports, it gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast and the college football playoffs. It looks like they're having a really hard time trying to figure out how to get a fourth SEC team into the playoffs. I'm sorry. I know. But I really think that what they may want to do is just see if they can get Jameis Winston declared ineligible and then have a playoff between Arkansas and A&M for the fourth playoff spot so it can be all SEC West.
Wow, I thought they had soap boxes over in Paris for that. See?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say about the rankings. And again, for anyone who missed them, the top four were in this order. Number one was Mississippi State, number two, Florida State, number three, Auburn, and number four, Ole Miss, with Alabama and Oregon, the first two out. My reaction to those rankings was I'm not surprised. I'm going to be very unpopular when I say this amongst the Big 12 nation, but because I'm not very pro, I'm not a big SEC guy. In fact, I'm kind of in the other direction where I'm sick of hearing about them. But I also am going to say that I don't have a problem with these rankings, but I'm also going to say this. I think three of those four teams that were in these initial top four will not be there when the one that counts comes out on December 7th. And I'm going to tell you right now, I do not see the two Mississippi schools hanging in there. I think Auburn's got another loss within it. It's going to take it out. And I think you will have a balanced-looking Final Four. So how about that?
Well, I agree with that. It doesn't change the fact that these rankings are very dubious, frankly. I mean, you can make logical arguments for why certain teams shouldn't be there. They're basically saying Ole Miss's win over Alabama is better than, you know, what Alabama has done, which I disagree with. Alabama's in non-conference beat West Virginia. That's better than anything Ole Miss did in non-conference. Really, Ole Miss has the win over Alabama, and they won at Texas A&M, which Texas A&M, let's be honest, they suck. I mean, that's not a quality win. That's the truth. They're not.
I don't like the way they play football either. Well,
they're a 6-6, 7-5 team, but they were being rewarded for that because A&M had that early push, which was ironically by the people doing the rankings. I don't know how you can put an Ole Miss over Alabama other than, you know, obviously the head-to-head, but right now Alabama's playing better, and Ole Miss is coming off a loss. By their logic, you know, Baylor's coming off a loss. 13th? Really? It's disheartening to see these. It's frustrating, and I agree, Kevin. This what we're seeing now is not going to be what we see in December. But no. you are still getting an insight into the heads of the people who are going to determine the playoff. And I think these heads are being swayed by the national narrative that the SEC West is just so far superior that a loss in the SEC West doesn't even count. Basically,
I know, and I would agree, and I hear what you're saying on that. And I'm almost and what I do love the fact, by the way, is how ESPN has caught in so much national criticism from the public about this, from the non-SEC folks, that they're extremely sensitive to this. And they're kind of, and in fact, you know, the Scott Van Pelt show, they were talking about this. You know, Chris Fowler from ESPN's Game Day kind of went on a little bit of an editorial spurt when they were down in Baton Rouge, of all places, in your safe haven to go off on that. But, you know, but that being said, the one thing that I'll say about from the Baylor-centric perspective on here, and I posted this on our board earlier, but for those who didn't hear it or see it, I was trying to get in the mind of the committee and saying, okay, number one, they recognize Baylor is a very good football team. Number two, they have absolutely no respect for Baylor's non-conference schedule, which was winless SMU, whose coach bailed out on them after the second game of the year. They completely discount Northwestern State, and they also have no respect for the Buffalo win because Buffalo also got rid of its coach too. And then their other two wins, minus TCU, and I'll get to that in a sec, is they've beaten Iowa State and Texas, who are having bad years, and they've combined for 5 wins. They have a great comeback win over TCU. And I think, and I really think, and we all knew this, guys, that when Baylor entered the season, And we all talked about the non-conference schedule. It was such a hot topic of discussion pretty much since the Fiesta Bowl ended, was that if this team runs the table, then they've got an absolute shot of being in the Final Four. If it slips, which they did, they're going to get punished for it, and that's exactly what happened. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's what our thinking, or at least my thinking, was validated by what the committee did to them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's no disagreement here. Look, I think Baylor is ranked too low at 13, but that's not my beef here. It's just mainly the order of the top four, five, six teams. Again, it's just showing that they think a loss in the SEC West really isn't something that should be punished. And
you can make an argument that Oregon's better than Ole Miss.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they have really a similar resume, other than their loss was at home to a ranked team, whereas, you know, Ole Miss's loss was on the road. But no, I agree. You can't say, look, is the SEC West the best division in college football? Without a doubt, hands down, it's very good. But I do think it's being overrated, and I think Oregon is a prime example of that. And Michigan State, that's their only loss, is at Oregon. Mm-hmm. I think they're being punished too much. I would put them in the top five or six.
I can't believe that Michigan State
one-loss team.
I can't believe that Michigan State is behind TCU. That's the thing that crossed.
Yeah, there are logical flaws in these rankings that I think can be, you know, easily exposed. But let's pick some games before I get too fired up.
Okay, yeah, and I'm going to say this. It's going to be like this until they come out with a real college football playoff where you don't have to worry about style points, you don't have to worry, where you can win in. And until they come up with that, you're going to see this kind of cluster.
I agree.
I won't complete the phrase. Anyway, and now, in our national picks, we have in the SEC, 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 we have number 3 Auburn at number 4 Ole Miss, and with a loss, Ole Miss could move up to number 2.
It's all in loss for sure, Stephen.
Okay, and so let us take a look. Jake, who do you pick in Auburn versus Ole Miss, at Ole Miss?
I think one of these teams will be put on the brink of elimination. It's going to be hard if there are 4 1-loss teams for a 2-loss team to get in ahead of anybody else with a 1-loss. I think you would see houses burning down of the committee. There'd be a lot of angry people. So obviously that sets it up to be a huge game. I'm leaning toward Ole Miss because that defense is certainly legitimate, but I'm going to pick Auburn to get a road upset at Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss has kind of been playing above its head a little, and I think Auburn, you know, coming off a national championship appearance, even if it took some luck to get there, I don't know. I just see them going in and getting an upset and kind of knocking Ole Miss out of the picture.
Kevin?
Can they both lose? But I'm going to go with Auburn because even though their defense struggled against South Carolina last week, I still think that they're dynamic enough offensively. And that even I think all they have to do is score maybe 20 points against Ole Miss and they're going to win. Ole Miss has got a great defense, but after seeing what I saw last week with Bo Wallace, and let's face it, Bo Wallace got away with some plays against Alabama. To his credit, they found a way to beat the Tide, and that's great. But that, having said that, do you really trust Bo Wallace running your offense to make plays down the stretch? Because he certainly didn't do it at LSU last week. So I'm going to go with Auburn in this game.
I'm going to go with Auburn.
Wow. I'm shocked. I thought I was going to go out on a limb with being the only Auburn pick.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's against my better judgment because Ole Miss is at home. But I think that Ole Miss, I don't know if they were playing above their heads, but I really think they're going to have a hangover from that game last week because they had a real chance to win that game. And I just think Auburn is, I think, a little more mentally resilient. Okay, and then we have, and I'm going to confess, I know absolutely nothing about either one of these two teams. We have number 17 Utah at number 14 Arizona State. And those are two teams that you didn't hear too many people talking about before the start of the season, but they've both put together some pretty good wins. Kevin, you want to start this one?
You know, I really like Arizona State. That's a team that really has played pretty consistent all year long. I mean, obviously they had the tough loss to UCLA, which if you look back on it and say, boy, what happened there? But then again, that UCLA game, it just got away from them with some freaky plays, pick six, big, you know, things like that. You know, and I stayed up and watched that whole Utah-USC game last week, and Utah – well, that was a really gritty effort by them, and that's a good-looking team that Kyle Whittingham's got. But I'm going to go with the Sun Devils here. I really like the fact that they're pretty experienced. They won a very tough road game at Washington last week, and I'm going to go with the Sun Devils here, who, by the way, are going to get Notre Dame at their place in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm picking ASU as well. I can't pick two road teams in a row in these games between ranked teams. You know, that's going against the law of averages. So I'll take Arizona State. I have also been impressed with them. And that offense, if it can get rolling, can put a team away.
Yeah, I'm going Arizona State also, and I'm doing it strictly because they're at home. I think Utah is a whole different team at home.
I agree with that.
And so moving on into the Big 12, this first one, I think I already know who everybody's picking. Number 18, Oklahoma at Iowa State. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go against the home team thing, and I'm going to pick the visiting Oklahoma Sooners to win. But Iowa State has done some pretty good stuff at home, and so, you know, it may not be a blowout, and this is an Oklahoma team that has proven that it can be beaten, but I'm going with OU anyway. And Kevin?
I'm going to go the Sooners. I think Iowa State's defense is awful if Trevor Knight gets well.
I'm going to go with Iowa State to lose the game, meaning Oklahoma wins. Yeah, I'm going to keep it short and sweet.
Okay, and here's one that, let's face it, in terms of really good games, number 7, TCU at number 20, West Virginia. Wow. Let's see. Okay, Jake, I believe it's your turn to pick first.
Oh, I wish I didn't have to pick first on this one. I'd like to hear what y'all have to say. I am going to pick TCU. I think they're just a little bit better overall. All-around team than West Virginia. West Virginia is awesome at home. We saw that 2 weeks ago. We don't need to be reminded of that. But I think TCU, despite giving up 61 points to Baylor, still has a defense that can come up with a lot more plays. You know, I that's two road underdogs I'm picking here, but I don't know. I'm impressed with TCU, and I guess anyone's impressive when you score 82 points. So, go with the Frogs.
Okay, right. So you're going.
I'm not
going
to say go Frogs, but I'm going to agree and go with the Horned Frogs, just because. I mean, I love the way Trevon Boykin is playing. You're going to have two really good quarterbacks, arguably the two best quarterbacks in this conference, getting together this weekend with Clint Trickett at West Virginia and Trevon Boykin at TCU. I think this is a game that probably goes somewhere into the 30s, but I think TCU is just a little bit better on defense, and they'll find a way to get enough stops to pull this one out on the road. Remember, they won there 2 years ago on a gutsy two-point call that Gary Patterson went for, and he got.
Yeah.
Okay, I am going to go West Virginia, and I'm predicting couch burnings in Morgantown this Saturday.
Oh, where this couch burning discussion with Morgantown? Oh, just got started. Jeez.
Oh, it's been going on for years.
Oh, I know, but it's such internet fodder.
So. Yeah, well, I don't get the big deal of it because they do it after every big win. I mean, you know, it's like lightning strikes on the front of the newspaper. Yeah, it happens frequently, guys. Yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's just kind of what you expect.
All right, and so, and next we have the team that can't score against the team that can't stop anybody, and that is Texas at Texas Tech. Let's see, is it my turn to go first on this?
It's your turn, sir.
I'm going to pick Texas. and I'm going to pick Texas because I think that the Texas offense can score against a bad defense, and I think Tech has a bad defense.
Golly, I'm torn here. I think I'll go with Texas because I just think Texas Tech has completely shown itself to be an absolute mess. And Cliff Kingsbury can talk all he wants about how, you know, the 82 points was number one embarrassing. Number two, they're using the Texas week to kind of put it behind them and get ready for the rival game. But you are what you are. They're penalized a lot. They turn it over a lot, but they had four more against TCU. They have the most turnovers of anyone in the conference. And Tyrone Swoops, despite the fact that it was a setback last week in Manhattan against Kansas State, I think he gets it up. You know what's really disappointing, though, guys, about the Texas offense? As much as we thought their running game was going to be their bell cow between Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray, that has not materialized at all.
No, their offensive line is in rough shape.
No, it's in rough shape, no question. When you lose your center, your captain, and Dominic Espinosa, that really hurts. But despite the fact you have talented backs like that, and they just can't get anything started there, I'd really like to go with Tech, but I just don't trust Tech to make enough plays. I mean, they're just too much of a mess as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, for a game between 2, 3, and 5 teams, I mean, this one really fascinates me. I think it should be billed as the movable object versus the stoppable force. another bad play on words. Sorry, guys.
It's going to be an interesting game to watch. It's going to be, I don't know, you know, it may be like driving by a car wreck. You don't want to look, but you just can't help yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, these two teams are really down right now, especially relative to the last 10 years. And, you know, these teams need it. If one of these teams is going to make a bowl, because I don't see both doing it, I think the winner has not the better chance, the only chance. If you lose, you're at 3-6. And with the schedules these teams have left, they're not going to make a bowl if they lose Saturday. So I think it's a fascinating game. I am leaning toward Texas, but I'm going to pick Texas Tech. I think they can score enough points to compensate for their defense.
Yeah, and you know, weird things happen to Texas in Lubbock.
Yeah,
I understand that pick. You know, the interesting thing though is I think that Coach Bro has already lost a lot of the fan base, and Charlie Strong, his job's not in jeopardy in first year. But I'll tell you what, if he loses to, because Texas' big win this year has been a just late, crazy win over Iowa State, and that's their biggest win this year. This is going to be their worst season since probably 56. So, you know, I mean, hey, you got to give a guy time to rebuild, and supposedly Mack Brown left the cupboard bare, but I'm starting to hear some grumblings out of Longhorn country. Yeah. Okay, and coming up then, we have Oklahoma State at number 9, Kansas, and Kevin, I think you ought to start us off because I know you got a man crush on Mike Gundy.
Yeah, but not this week. The way that their offense has completely misfired the last two games against TCU and at home against West Virginia, the Cowboys just aren't running the ball very well. Mike Gundy has just talked about the fact that they just cannot get that part going this year, and they haven't been consistent about it. And really, if you look at Oklahoma State's schedule, they haven't beaten anyone with a winning record, I don't believe. And now they're getting into the crux of their schedule. And I think it's going to be a long afternoon in Manhattan. So give me the Wildcats to win that.
Yeah, I like Kansas State to win this convincingly, or as convincingly as Kansas State can. They don't seem to just blow out anybody because they take 10 minutes per drive. Oklahoma State, you're seeing what happens when a team depends like 99% on seniors the next year. I mean, it's just they were depleted by graduation, and they just weren't ready to reload like they have been somewhat in the past.
Yeah, and I'm going Kansas State also, and I think it's about time that Bill Snyder gets a little bit of love, because that guy, I tell you who the Wildcats remind me of is they remind me of the San Antonio Spurs in basketball. that they just go out and they play sound in every single aspect of the game. And Snyder is just so even keel that, they're almost scary. They're almost mechanical to watch. And I really think Kansas State is good. And I think what's really a shame is, if you think about it, if they hadn't had a couple of uncharacteristic bad kicks against Auburn, I don't think there's any question this team's in the top four.
Yeah, I mean, that's another rankings thing. I mean, their only loss is at home to the number three team, according to the committee. They won at Oklahoma, and they're number nine. I mean, sorry. I didn't mean to bring that subject up again. I think we have one more game to pick.
That's okay. I'll bring it up eight or nine times over the rest of the podcast. We have Kansas at number 13, Baylor, and I'll jump out. I think that Baylor uses this week to get well, but I think it'll be another week before they can actually prove anything to anybody.
I'll go next. Yeah, I think Baylor wins this game pretty comfortably. I don't think there's really much to talk about here other than the fact that how bad will it get, and I think it'll get really, really bad. And they'll take care of business, move to 7-1, and get ready for Oklahoma.
Guys, you're forgetting to predict scores, too. Obviously, we know Baylor's going to win this. I'm going to say anything TCU can do, Baylor can do better. So I'll say Baylor 83, Kansas 20. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to go 59-13.
I'm going to go 45-10, Baylor.
Whoa. Kevin, you and I had Baylor 48-14.
Okay.
All right.
This is the first time I've ever predicted Baylor to score more points than either of y'all.
Yeah, we're wanting to see what comes up.
Yeah, but I agree with it, but I think it's Kansas. I'm not trying to be rude. It's just they're not a good team, you know?
No, they're not, but they're a better team than they were 5 weeks ago. And anyway,
marginally.
That wraps for us, and we'll catch you next week on the Sic'em Sportscast.
The Sic'em Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.